3 over par 74. Get your facts right, Steve. Come on.
I know.
But I really did card a 3 over 74. So
oh, really?
I'm very good. I'm just trying to be modest and honest, okay? Also, Steve, two things. One, that Wisconsin report really upsets me. Don't appreciate that. I had all of the latest info on Wednesday, and here this guy comes raining on my parade. And number two, it is apocalyptic out here, is it not?
Yes, it is. Right now it is. But that's why I reference it as an option. I didn't say it was the plan.
Thank you.
That's why I'm in the broadcasting business. I can come up with certain words that couch it.
It's nice. I get that the coaches want. I mean, the coaches are bothered that they're not playing right now, right? Like, that's just the reality. There was never, and it's become very, very clear over the last 2 weeks that there was never a consensus among the ADs or the coaches. Obviously, they all wanted to play, and if they didn't want to play, that was a very, very small minority. You know, this was the president's decision, and it was the commissioner's decision. And so any of the talk around moving the schedule up, specifically from the perspective of coaches, like, yeah, they're all in on that. I just think that there's a downside to all of this in that what is the likelihood that in 3 weeks or 2 weeks span of time, presidents will be convinced otherwise, that their decision that they made hurriedly is wrong. Like, it just seems very, very unlikely to me, especially given the experience that Penn State has had in the past with Big Ten presidents making decisions about things. if you catch my drift.
Well, to be honest with you, I think the only way that would change anybody's mind, they're not going to change their mind. It's just a question of when they think they can start.
Right.
Because the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 are essentially, there are a few games on September 12th, but most everybody's starting in the 26th. It wouldn't be like 3 weeks into the season where you sit back and go, oh, man, they are, you know, they actually are playing. And that's deep into the schedule. So right now, in my opinion, it's all still just guesswork as to whether they can do it or not. I mean, they're on path to do it, and I think they will do it, but it's still guesswork.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And you know, it's why the decision to cancel when they did still doesn't really make a ton of sense, right? Like, it wasn't the decision that is being questioned as much as the timing of it.
Right.
Because given the national case rate, given the testing inaccuracies and unreliability, like there's lots of stuff in Kevin Warren's letter that makes sense. But, you know, like, if you're looking at it dispassionately, and I understand that there aren't a lot of people who are looking at it dispassionately, but if you do that, you say, huh, yeah, that is a problem that occasionally are right and occasionally are wrong.
Sure.
Like, that's a major problem. You know, I just, if you wait and use the built-in backstop, right, that was the whole purpose of that month-long span from July to early August when they came up with a schedule that had all kinds of built-in flexibility. Like, they built that system and then didn't utilize any of it, you know, which just continues to seem panicked. I think is the word, right? It's not, not short-sighted. It's panic. They just rushed into it, and I don't think they needed to.
Well, in fact, I was on SiriusXM earlier this week, you know, and they asked me about it, you know, and you know, people being upset and so forth. I said, I think the bottom line is most of the people that have looked at it just question the timing of it because one school after another, testing wise, was getting it done. And with a thunder and lightning storm going on, we were actually knocked out there for a few seconds. So as we watch it pour down here, and we haven't seen it rain this hard in a long time, we're going to get Nate back on the line and talk with him and go back to what we were talking about. My point was that I was on SiriusXM, and they were asked about upset, coaches, how they're reacting and so forth. I said, look, everybody's just, I said, just looking at the timing of it because – the testing numbers were coming in really well, and you felt like you were on track and you were clearing hurdles. There was no hurdle yet that would have stopped you from going. Now that's a now it's a moot point because the decision's already been made. And so Nate, who rejoins us on the line, now they've come up with options on this, and you were the first one to report on the early January 8-game, 9-week option.
Yep. Yep.
So how, it would be neutral. There's more domes than people realize. There's St. Louis, Minneapolis. I mean, people forget the Brewers play in the dome in Milwaukee. They've got the UNI Dome in Iowa, Ford Field. I mentioned Minneapolis already. You know, if you wanted to go into the Carrier Dome, I'm sure they'd be welcoming. But they accept the rent money. Indianapolis. Indianapolis. Yeah. So, I mean, they have options.
Totally. I could be out of line here because I don't – obviously, there are TV considerations. Like, and that was, I guess, the whole thing with the Blue Jays moving to Buffalo, right, was getting that stadium ready for television purposes. That was one of the big hangups.
Well, part of it too was, there's certain amenities that Major League Baseball has. Clubhouse is one.
Right.
There's a lot of elements that go into it. Dugouts have to be of Major League proportion. Williamsport, in fact, redid their dugouts completely to accommodate the one Major League game that they have a year. So there's a long list, but go ahead on the TV part.
Well, I guess my point is, if you can put it on television, right, and it's indoors, I'm guessing there might even be some practice facilities, NFL practice facilities, that might work in just for this purpose. But even as you said, there's more than enough real size stadium. There's enough indoor stadium to make that work. And so I think the plan, as I understood it, or as I understand it, was eight games starting the week after New Year's, and every you'll have two teams on a bye every week, and so my math, six games every weekend, basically, in the Big Ten, and the goal
that'd be seven.
Not if two teams were on a bye.
Oh, on a bye, yeah, okay. I understand. Yep. I know what you're saying.
Well,
okay.
So seven for the bulk.
Right, I got you.
Right?
Yep.
Yep,
I got you. You're right.
Yeah, but in any case, part of the goal then would be to not have those games overlap each other. You would want to be able to space them out, and so my assumption was that Thursdays were on the table. Fridays were on the table. Saturdays were on the table. Sundays would be out, obviously, if the NFL is still going on at that time, which it is. But over that span, you can see how that might work. And then, obviously, you give yourself an opportunity to, again, get a winner out of the East and get a winner out of the West, and then have those teams play each other and – you've achieved something. Is it perfect? No. Is it even good? Maybe not. I get all the frustrations. Like, I get it. But, I've been locked inside my house for 6 months now, right? Like, are we not all willing to accept okay at this point? Like, I'm in favor of okay as opposed to nothing.
What were your thoughts, other than, hey, you're stealing my story, about the about the idea being broached that as a possibility Thanksgiving weekend as a start.
Just to clarify, I was kidding. I don't care. No, I mean, if that works, sure. I think that the major question, and I'm going to steer us way off track here, but I think that
beautiful.
The major question.
I love it.
Here we go. Here's the major question, Steve, that is not being asked, but is to me, the presumption that's being made under all of these conversations is that students will not be on any campuses anymore by the time any of this stuff actually gets underway.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. That's Thanksgiving weekend. There would be no students here, and they would not be here the rest of the semester into January.
But I think that there's also a second, me being more cynical, presumption that they're not even going to be here in October. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be here at the beginning of November. And so, you know, when you talk about bubbles, you know, and this is a point that Sandy Barber made on her call last week. But when you talk about bubbles, there's kind of two groups of thought around it. One is, yeah, the NBA, you put all those teams into one place. The NHL is doing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. You put them into one place, and they literally don't leave the campus. They don't leave that site. Well, there's a second line of thinking, which is Penn State kind of had a bubble here this summer with its student athletes.
That's right.
They're not interacting with the outside world when nobody else is on campus. Right? Like,
yeah.
They're just with their teammates. None of their friends are here. None of those outside, you know, for lack of a better word, like vectors of this virus. Like that possibility, I'm not saying it's completely eliminated, but it decreases itself dramatically. And so can football play right now with every student body on campus across the Big Ten and ACC and SEC? Like, look, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but either they're going to have a ton of cases and shut it down, or conversely, and worth also thinking about, they're going to have a ton of cases and they just don't care. it doesn't bother them.
No, because look, Major League Baseball and MLS have kept going. And for the most part, they've tested out pretty well. Contrary to popular belief, they have actually tested out very well. In other words, the Reds shut down for a day with one.
Yep.
Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't really count too much for me if you're going to shut down for one day. Here's the other part. People ask all the time, how many players will opt out? To be honest, Nate, this is only my personal opinion. Fewer than you think, and here's the reason why. If they're going to play SEC, Big 12, ACC, American, Sun Belt, right, how much do you risk getting passed by not playing? Where now you may have to play because you've been passed out. I've heard nobody bring that up because guess what? Okay, that's a realistic possibility. Look, all of a sudden, X over here put down some great tape, and Y is sitting there saying, I don't think I'm in the third round anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And again, the cynical side of me says, it doesn't really matter. It just doesn't. 70,000 people show up to watch the blue-white game every spring.
Right. No, but I'm just thinking about people have talked about the quality of play, you know,
and starters
opting out and so forth. Because, I mean, you know, people say the X player doesn't play. They're like, well, they're not going to be as good because he's not there.
It doesn't matter. My entire business is based off of what the backup quarterback can do. It's based on what the third, like everyone wants to know how the rookie wide receiver is playing in practice.
Well, you don't think
because
that,
they don't see him in the game.
You don't think I haven't lived that for 40 years?
I know you have. I know, and that's my whole point is there is an appetite for the uniform. There is an appetite for the pageantry and just playing football. I'm just saying that there is an entire culture right now that is starving for football, is starving for any type of athletic competition. You know, there was a period where ESPN in the spring was showing fixed cameras of, like, amateur tennis matches at an abandoned park. You know, like, It is. They will go to any length to, and when I say they, I mean we will go to any length to see this stuff. And so, you know what, Micah Parsons, love you, brother. It's okay. It's all right. You know, like, it's okay that he's gone. It's okay that Pat Freiermuth might not play. You know, these are 125 man rosters in college football.
Yep.
There will still be a above average, well above average product on the field. No matter when they play.
Oh, I agree with that. My only point is there may be fewer players opting out than people realize.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, you know, Lamont Wade, Antonio Shelton, you know, Journey Brown even, right? Like, there are guys who are not necessarily assured. You're giving them a fewer game schedule. You know, if you can do it safely and you can prove that the game can be played without risking their long-term health, I agree. I think there's lots of guys that'll continue to play.
In the college basketball part, I know November. You know, one of the options is to start on time, September 29th, go November 10th. It's now looking more and more like the leader in the clubhouse, you know, because they won't make this decision or announce what they want to do until September 16th, but might be November 25th, which would be an October 14th start. What's your thought on that? Because obviously there would be great overlap between football and basketball.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, like, to me, the bottom line with basketball is, unlike football, it is the lifeblood of the NCAA. It has to happen. You cannot take a 2-year loss on the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. And so I am of the mindset, and I think that you and others would probably agree, be as creative as you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, come up with as many plans as you want to come up with. Exhaust all of the possibilities and find a way to get it done. And I think that the NCAA, specifically with basketball, with men's basketball, is going to be highly, highly, highly motivated, you know, to make that happen, and has more control over it than it did with football.
Well, that, and again, the confidence level with the basketball decision is because a key player in it is Dan Gavitt. He brings universal respect to the table, and he is in constant contact with people. That's how you get universal respect. And he's done that. And so if they say September 16th, this is what we think we can do, you're going to have people across the country lauding it and saying, okay, if that's what Dan thinks, we're going to do it.
Right. Yep. And I mean, I think that you saw that even with some of the disappointment when it initially happened, but I think he handled the initial shutdown well.
No, he did a great, not a good job. He did a great job. He was very forward about it and discussed what was going on. Everybody looked around and said, okay, well, if that's what he thinks, then, you know, we all respect him. Let's do what he says.
Yep.
All right. Congrats on the 3-over par 74. How many birdies in the round?
You know what? Not on the front. 3 on the back.
Wow. I've never had 2-in-1. I've never had more than 2-in-1 round.
I got hot on the back, Steve. I was, as they say, throwing darts.
Yeah.
Dropping them out of the sky.
Yeah, I shot a week ago, yesterday, Thursday, I shot 79. So, I mean, I hung in there. And it was about as stress-free a round as there is in the – I mean, I was like, I'm like going, oh, okay, okay. Oh, okay.
As I told T. Frank, we all stink. We're just all varying levels.
Oh, no. You put us on like let's go to the BMW championship at Olympia Fields. 150 Steve, later.
Steve, you opened the door for me. I played Olympia Fields.
Have you?
Like 4 years ago, a dude that loves Penn State found me on Twitter after – you know, I'm a bozo and post my scorecards occasionally. Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, I'm a member at Olympia Fields. We got to play. It was awesome.
Oh, every once in a while, Jack Ham will give me this call. He says, guess where I am? I'm like, okay. I don't have a tracker on your phone. I'm at Whistling Straits. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Or I'm at Pinehurst number two. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. No, I want to be in that club. I'm not there yet. Someday.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Great reporting by you and Ryan, by the way, on this.
Thanks, Steve. Much appreciated. Thanks for having me.